Your fake Stugatz is actively giving Mina Kimes a headache. Mina Kimes is sitting in with us today. And I want to put on the poll, Guillermo, please, at Lebatard Show. Do you say, do you, the person answering this poll, do you say, I couldn't care less or I could care less? Because LeBron James says, I could care less that Donald Trump doesn't want to watch our games because he calls kneeling a disgrace. And so I'm asking the audience, because so many, LeBron got that phrase wrong. You don't say, I could care less. If it, the phrase is, I couldn't care less, but I feel like a lot of people say, I could care less. I'll get to that with Mina Kimes in a second, because I think this Axios interview that Trump did is the single worst interview I've ever seen from an American president. Like, you can't even make it up. It was hypnotizing, breathtaking, just amazing to watch. You will never get another interview like that in the future with a president, and you certainly don't have one in the past. But before we get to that, I wanted to get to the story we were talking about regarding Ellen. Now, Ellen has always had this pristine reputation as just being a wonderfully kind woman that people like, that's the reason she's popular and her TV show does so well, because people like her. And now her workplace is evidently filled with hostility and sexual harassment. People have been fired. She says she doesn't know anything about that. And Jay Leno is putting out on Twitter, I don't discard a 40-year friendship on hearsay. The Ellen I know has raised over $125 million for charity and has always been a kind and decent person. I fully support her. And then he signs it on Twitter, Jay Leno, which is the true sign of an old person. When it's coming from the Jay Leno verified account and he is signing it to Jay Leno. But Bomani is saying, do that in private. You don't need to be riding publicly for people when you don't know the details on what their workplace environment was.
Yeah, no one's asking you to discard your 40-year friendship. They're just asking you to say nothing, dude. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he can still be her friend. Like, all these famous people writing for her, by the way, it kind of has the opposite effect, right? Because I kind of believe them all when they say that she's nice to them, but breaking news, a lot of famous and successful and rich and influential people are only nice to other famous, rich, successful, and influential people. Like, that's not in dispute. It seems to me that the people coming forward are like underlings and, you know, lower level folks.
I was jarred by it, though, because her public reputation is one that is so pristine. Like, that show pays her $50 million a year, I feel like, and she's a good comedian. Other comedians in that small world of comedians will tell you she is good at stand-up comedy, good at the sculpted skills of comedy, but I believe that success of that show has almost everything to do with she's publicly likable. Right. People just like her. And so the disconnect for me between her pristine reputation publicly and the people working for her saying, man, we had a terrible environment and people have been fired now, Mina. Executive producers have been fired. And what's happening now in America, where all of this stuff ends up getting politicized. So when the woke people or the gay people or the minorities take these hits about sexual harassment in the workplace, when it's Ellen, that gets weaponized by the other side to sort of laugh at. See what happens when all of you are liberal. You know, it happens all the time. Like it happened to me this week. It happened to me this week with a stupid poll that we did. Like people delight in sort of the appearance of hypocrisy. Oh, look, they're one of the woke people getting caught by the, the fragile stuff and the sensitive stuff.
I find that really frustrating, what the phenomena you're referring to, the sort of whataboutism, right, where any issue or mistake or topic gets weaponized in this constant culture war that we're all caught into, because sometimes I wish we could just talk about the underlying issue itself. I felt this way about DeSean Jackson. I've often felt this way about the NBA in China when I came out and talked to you about that the other day, where like these are issues and stories and screw-ups by athletes and people in sports and leagues that very much deserve to be discussed. The NBA, for example, deserves criticism. But then you go on the internet and you see, oh wait, this actual discussion has been like run through a funhouse mirror and refracted and, you know, distorted and used to have this separate argument about Black Lives Matter. I don't want to have that argument, and I don't want to support someone, you know, using it in bad faith. But I feel like we can't let those people dictate the bounds of discussion and say, okay, we can't talk about, you know, China or Deshaun Jackson or whatever.
Can you help me understand, because the way that we're divided in this country right now, and everyone's in their own bubbles, and what your echo chamber of Twitter or the people who follow you, they're much different than the people attack you when, you know, one of these things ends up getting weaponized. But I'm watching, and I know that my leanings, my sensibilities align with John Oliver's, but I'm marveling, okay, at what they continue to do on television, the degree of difficulty on what he's doing, sort of following John Stewart and all those writers. John Stewart became basically our most credible newsman at the time of Anchorman News, because through comedy, people were enjoying the fact-based reporting and the smart of his show. John Oliver had a segment last week, and it was like 37 minutes of just him talking to a camera. And I cannot tell you, like, Mina and I do television. I'm okay at television. Mina is good at television, but I really just think I'm okay at television. And fine. I know how hard that is, what John Oliver is doing, especially without anyone laughing and just making joke after joke and hard point after hard point. And I know he's got writers, but what I saw him do last week on the subject of how American history has been whitewashed, I don't see, while watching that, as I get fact after fact after fact, how people can take sides on that, because he's just giving facts and facts. But because people are aligned in their camps now, and because that's not what you're getting on that whatever John Oliver is giving you is not what you're getting in your bubble. What are you laughing about?
Billy just wrote in the chat, why does John Oliver get praise when his stories go on for 35 minutes, but I get crushed?
Because you deserve it, dude.
It's a valid point, Billy. You know, he's exactly like you. If your stories were cogent, useful, relevant, had a point, were going somewhere, researched perhaps, then yeah, you're the same.
Thank you.
So you think your 35 minutes are comparable to John Oliver sitting in front of a camera with his writers working all week for that half hour of television? Yeah. You think your yammering ramblings are in that company of John Oliver?
I have a theory, and this cuts to what you were saying at the very top of the show about Billy, which is, if you want nothing from him, he'll give you 35 minutes. If we said, hey, Billy, you're going to get 35 minutes on the radio to say whatever you put together, a John Oliver-esque presentation about, I don't know, you know, reality TV or whatever you're interested in, he would give you 30 seconds and then tap out.
You're overestimating him. He would fart and then collapse in a puddle of his own neuroses.
Show me the money.
30 seconds. I'm dying to get 30 seconds of good out of him. One of these times, an efficient 30 seconds of good when I need just 30 seconds. But Billy and I have never, I'm saying this in the history of our show, never once had our timing down. Never once. Do you want to share with us, Billy, why you and Mina are giggling maniacally off air? Again, you guys do a better show off air than you do on air. I wish we had any of this laughter or any of this fun happening on air. Do you want to share it, or are you going to leave me hanging out here and just say, no, Dan, let's keep it moving, not for air?
Just two cats fighting over the litter box, Dan, you know what I mean?
So here is a tweet from Will Manso, the Heat broadcaster. You have been exasperating today. You really have. You guys get paid for what we do on air. You guys get paid for that. Being funny off air while entertaining to you guys doesn't help our audience or our company.
Dan, I was going to ask you in the first segment when we were doing all the cat talk, that we're doing straight talk now, but cat talk earlier, you said that I'm the weak links. Was that on purpose?
That's a good one. That is a good one. That's
I'm pretty sure he was kidding around.
Oh. No!
What?
No!
What?
Kidding around?
What?
No!
Meowser.
That was perfect.
You know, you really do have a Jim Garfield relationship, the more I think about it. Dan and Billy, right? Just feed some lasagna every now and then.
So Will Manso is tweeting the Heat broadcaster. Eric Spolstra, let's see if we have anything from Billy on this, as our resident Cuban guy, cafecito guy. Eric Spolstra was saying in the bubble he was missing that Cuban coffee. And so Cafe Butelo sent Spo a big gift package, like super, super Cuban Miami. He would, if he were to have too much of that, he would test positive for cocaine. Because that stuff is like, it's very strong what he's requested. They don't have it in Orlando.
No, I mean, you need to take like one shot and that's it. You know, the Super Bowl, I don't know if we've discussed this. I think we have. But the Super Bowl, we had this idea, which was a horrible idea, where I'd be doing these little Cuban coffee shots every time we had a guest. And then, like, I got into it. Like, David Ortiz was there, and I'm like, I got to do two with Big Poppy. So I was just downing these things the entire show.
That's crazy that you would do that. Crazy.
Okay. So this was, I think, the day before the last day, and there was all kinds of ESPN executives there. So, like, I don't normally get FaceTime with a lot of these people because they're up in Bristol most of the time, right? So, like, they'd see me hanging out. There's, like, 5 in the afternoon. It's like, oh, you want to come talk? And I'm like, yeah, sure, whatever. So I'm talking with them, and I – no lie, the room was spinning. Yes. Right before I had the meeting, like, with the executive people, there were people talking saying, do you want Advil? Because someone, I guess, had said they had a headache. I'm like, no, I'm good. And they're like –
yes, and you're somehow biting your own teeth because you're just giving off that you're filled with cocaine. You're bug-eyed in a way that makes you seem crazy.
I'm not exaggerating. I was sitting down and I just had to drink water and was holding a chair because I think I had, in a span of 3 hours, 9 shots. And the room was actually spinning like when I was sitting there. It was crazy. So, Spo, be careful.
Just explain to me, please, that night when you went home and thought to yourself, well, I might never see any of those executives again, and they have my future in their hands. How much remorse did you feel about the fact that you had given off lunatic bath salt eater?
I think, well, okay, so if we're starting from the starting point of where I normally am at when I'm telling stories, I don't think there was much of a perceptible difference. It was just more of an internal feeling, if that makes sense.
Okay, so it's just this roiling fear. But how? So you thought you maybe made a good impression?
Oh no, I thought that they probably left wondering, is this person okay? But you know, I didn't say anything too embarrassing. I don't think I was just like very like hyped up. Yeah. And then like while that was going on, I actually think that I was saved by Masvidal and Usman just like starting a fight like feet away from me because it took attention away from me. Just like, hey, so how's it going? What do you think about Miami? Oh, want to go to dinner today? Yeah.
Mina Kimes is with us here, and I couldn't believe something I learned about you because Chris and Billy are the ones who are forever disappointing me in terms of having very little in the way of movie knowledge when it comes to 80s, 90s, and really, honestly, the 2000s. But Mina Kimes revealed, and I'm guessing Billy and Chris might be in your camp on this. Mina Kimes revealed she has never seen Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
What?
Am I the only person here who's never seen it?
I've seen it. I have not. Like, it's not one of the movies I can like recite lines from, but I have seen it like years ago.
Listen,
I saw it.
You don't need to read the Wikipedia to know what happens. He takes a day off. Like, asked and answered. The reason I put it in the idea sheet, though, is because I tweeted this. It, for me, personally, I've gone so long without seeing it, I feel like it's kind of part of my identity now. And even if it was like on TV and I had nothing else to do, I would probably walk out of the room because I feel at 34 years old, it's too late for me to see it. And then I was thinking about all the things like that, like things that, you know, like the bad hills you've chosen to die on that have become part of your identity because you feel like it's too late, even though you know you might be wrong.
When and what are they? Do you have others? Put it on the poll.
Yeah, I wrote a list. Yeah.
You wrote a list. Okay. At Lebatard Show, put it on the poll. Is 34 years old too old to watch Ferris Bueller's Day Off? And also put on the poll at Lebatard Show, do you judge Mina negatively and think she's a bad person because she hasn't seen Ferris Bueller's Day Off? What is your list of other things like this that are part of your identity that you are too old to try?
These are opinions that I've had that have like said so much that my friends associate them with me, but I think they might be wrong, but I feel like it's too late. Cupcakes at weddings are a bad idea. You know what? Sometimes I'm at a wedding and I see a tray. I feel like early on when I was in my mid-20s, I'd be like, really? You didn't get a cake? But now, sometimes, it looks kind of good. But I've gone too far. I've gone too far on this.
All right, put it on the poll, Guillermo. Are cupcakes at weddings a bad idea?
Okay, this one's really bad. Most people don't need math. This one started in fourth grade because my teacher had a poster and it was like all the jobs that need math, right? There's a point of sort of showing the students you're going to need math at some point. I walked up and I pointed out to the teacher, at least 50% of these jobs are different kinds of engineers. I will never need math. And I've stuck by this, even though, and I didn't take math in college somehow. I've certainly not taken math since then. And I don't know math now, but sometimes I think it might be useful.
Do you have many more of these? Do they fit in this segment, or should we tease this until the next segment? Because I think we can have some conversational fun here with some of these.
I have a couple more, but they're pretty bad.
Okay, so that was your best work? You just gave us the best of what you've got?
All restaurants are good.
Oh, wow.
Because they're all better than what I'd make at home. But, you know, now that I have, like, money, I don't really feel that way. But I've said it so many times.
All restaurants are good. All right, put that on the poll as well, Guillermo. Not like that, but at Le Batard Show, does every restaurant on earth make food better than you do? Yes or no is the question. It's a good one to explore.
Guests on the Dan Le Batard Show appear via the Shell Pennzoil performance line. It's that time of year. The NFL is almost here and ESPN Fantasy Football is around the corner. Listen, man, I didn't ask for any of this. Draft your team, compete with your friends, and take home the crown. Sign up now at ESPN.com/fantasyfootball today. Dano, now your Sports Center update. Fall sports championships have been canceled in NCAA Division II and Division III. As a result of the coronavirus pandemic, Max Scherzer exited because of the leg issue after laboring through one inning in the Mets' 3-1 victory over Washington. And finally, the average person will spend 90,000 hours at work in their lifetime. Not me. For all the latest headlines and information, tune in to SportsCenter on ESPN Radio all throughout the day.
So just out of curiosity, Billy, as a producer for this radio show, were you trying to put Mina in a position to fail there? Did it just happen by accident?
Whoa! I thought I crushed it.
Yeah. She said it, you know, in one of the breaks, she said, you know, I think I could do a better Stugatz than you did. I said, why don't you interrupt the next Sports Center? And then she said, why don't I do the next Sports Center? I said, sure, go right ahead.
I'm sure someone at home listening thought that was Stugatz.
Yeah, I don't think anyone would know, based on the impressions today, anyone would know Stugatz was off today.
The reason I asked the question, Billy, is because I know you to be a creature who is haunted by fears and neuroses. I don't think of you as a creature that is filled with joy, but the greatest happiness I ever see on your face is the happiness I saw about 2 seconds into her reading when you were enjoying someone other than you failing. Mina, I'm telling you, he looked so happy. What he does is, look, we're doing this on Zoom right now. This is when I know that Billy the Instigator has achieved his success of throwing a Molotov cocktail in the middle of our show. He pushes his chair back. Does that chair have wheels? And he leans against the wall behind him, sort of scared, but red-faced with laughter because someone other than him is failing. And that's what I just saw. Chris, tell me I'm wrong on this, because you've seen it before. Billy does it to you more than anyone, where he specifically puts you in positions to fall on your face and then roars with laughter at playing defense against everyone's career.
Oh, he loves it. He loves when people fail. It's kind of a thing on this show. I find myself doing it too. When somebody else is failing, I'm just like, good, they get it for once. Like, we've created this atmosphere where it's just like, we all want to do a good show, but we all want each other to fail miserably.
Bunch of Ellens, it sounds like, around here, guys. I wanted Mina to succeed. I thought she did a great job. She was doing something out of her comfort zone that she enjoyed. I was I was happy. I was happy for her.
Not a bunch of Ellens. One Ellen, because, you know, the fish rots from the bespectacled head. You guys know what I'm talking about.
Jesus Christ, she just hit me with a bespectacled head fish reference that was directed at me. She just called me Ellen because she tried to do the worst Stugatz I've heard since Jerry O'Connell yesterday.
You're trying to turn the cats against each other, and you know what? Cats don't fight like that. At least they don't fight at the behest of humans, as far as I understand cat behavior. That's not how it works. There's no cat
cats eat fish, Dan.
Thank you, Billy, for nothing, as always. Yeah, thank you for kidding around. Can you guys help me, please, understand why I have the reputation that I do with the audience and with you, where Mina, you think that I'm rooting against sports? Like, I honestly really don't understand why anyone would get that impression of me.
Yet again, I didn't say Dan Le Batard is rooting at sports. Like a great producer wanting to, you know, foment some spirited discussion on the show, I wrote in all caps, is Dan Le Batard rooting against sports? So you are heavily presuming how I feel about it before we even get this started. All I'm saying, Dan, is yesterday on Highly Questionable, we joked about a movie called False Positive, and I said your movie would be called True Negative, right? It's tonal. It's tonal. Like, I think right now there's this whole, if you're realistic about COVID, you're quote-unquote rooting against sports thing that's going around the internet. That's obviously absurd. However, I think some people are picking up on tone, and this is more about the internet than the radio, although I don't know what your fans are saying, where there's a sense of, like, doom, correctly, right, if you're talking about the facts, that can sometimes hang over these conversations.
So it's doom in the face of hope? Is that what we're talking about? Get you accused of rooting against sports? Like, it's, as opposed to hoping, which is what we've been doing with our masks off, as we continue to be the worst in the world at this pandemic. Like, the worst in the world. We are worse than anybody by leaps and bounds, and we had plenty of warning that this was coming. That's rooting against sports because I've been hiding in my house for 6 months.
This goes back to the tone situation Mina was just bringing up a second ago. See, not the best there.
I think it kind of cuts actually to what we were talking earlier about how everybody goes on the internet or wherever these days wanting to have a fight and then seeing whatever's happening in the landscape and then taking that information and fitting it into the rubric of the fight people want to have, right? Which is how you end up with situations where reporters are literally just putting out factual information about the pandemic and, you know, science, what they're seeing, what they're reading, what they're hearing, and perhaps being critical of the leagues. And then it gets filtered through this argument that people want to have where you're rooting against sports, which obviously you're not doing. Obviously, none of us are because all of our livelihoods depend on it.
Okay, so in that vein, though, because social media is such a poison well, and I saw Michelle Obama on her new podcast saying that she's just got a low-level depression that soaks her, and it spoke to me because I've been feeling it lately just by what is happening in our streets and on social media. And I ask you, Mina, as a young person and the relationship with social media, I have gotten such relief from getting out of my phone. I can't entirely, because if you do, you fall behind, and you can't fall behind in the sports talking business. But if I could throw my phone into the ocean and never touch it again, I would be in a more peaceful, emotional, spiritual, mental place than if I were checking social media and finding everyone fighting about this garbage, this just perpetual poison well garbage. And I'm wondering what your relationship is with social media, as someone who has to be on top of things, August 17th, when you start on NFL Live and you have to know everything that's happening with football, but you're always entering just a contaminated space where everyone is fighting with each other.
I've gotten better at looking less, which it bums me out, though, because there are still people saying nice and funny things, fans of your show with inside jokes, like interesting and cool conversations happening, but you can't read everything or you're going to see the toxic stuff as well. And the only thing you can do to protect your own mental health is set up a filtration system of sorts, right? I would say, it's funny, when I first started doing your radio show, I was thinking about this, right? Because it's been a long time. I was really struggling with this. You remember I would come on and tell you that I was crying reading social media, not just from doing the radio show, but from going on Highly Questionable and learning that there were things wrong with me that I never knew I never knew I had a, you know, messed up nose and a weird laugh and skinny Brandon Ingram arms until the internet told me so. And it used to be really devastating, but I've actually gotten a lot better at compartmentalizing that over the years. And I don't know how it happened other than I just look less.
That's interesting, because I want to get to some sound that John Amici, he broke down privilege so exceptionally well, articulated it. Why are you laughing?
Chris just texted. I didn't know. Chris, can you read it?
No, wait. Hold on a second. No, Chris, you don't read it. No. Hold on. There's in the chat. This is always my favorite. When Mina loses it and can't say something because she's too busy laughing. Yes, it is a funny comment that Chris just made in the chat, but I don't believe that Mina's going to be able to deliver it to the audience because she starts laughing every time. There is a funny joke here to end this segment with. Mina, the floor is yours. No, what did Chris say? What did Chris say in the chat? Articulate it clearly. Do not snort. Say it in a way America understands, please, so we can have the ending to this segment without you falling apart.
Chris said, I didn't know I was fat until the internet told me.
Raindrop, drop top, time to read the script for a hot spot.
Chris, you didn't know you were fat until the internet told you?
Honestly, I always thought I was just a little, like, you know, just a little, a little extra. But the people, I'm fat, man. It's a thing now. I know it.
You're not fat.
Yes, he is.
Thank you, Mina.
I never had looked at my eyebrows before the internet did. But I want to play this sound. I want to play
you
this
look
sound.
In the mirror?
Not really. Not there. I mean, put it on the poll, Guillermo, at Levitard Show. Do you spend any time looking at your eyebrows? At Levitard Show. Just yes or no question. But I want to get into this privilege conversation because specifically you and Sarah and Katie, by coming in here and doing these shows, have taught me something that I would have never had access to if not seeing the lengths you guys have to go to so that the internet won't be cruel to you, because the male demographic that populates this particular cesspool can be awfully cruel and make me wonder sometimes whether they love women or whether they hate women. So I want to get into that with you, but we'll do so next. DraftKings is first here. Tell the people, Fakes Dugats, how they can make some money betting on sports.
ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. That's it.
Thank you, Fake Stugat. John Amici is our friend. He is somebody for a long time, since he was a student at Penn State, who is among the most brilliant minds that I have ever met. And for all this talk about how divided America is and how we can fight about anything and everything, privilege has become a fighting word. You know, Stan Van Gundy is on Twitter saying that it's, you know, not surprising at all. He's disappointed, but not surprised that, according to NBC, white Americans would, at a 50% rate, vote for Donald Trump today. And Stan Van Gundy is talking about how embarrassing it is that those numbers are where they are, because I was surprised to see that as well. But John Amici describes privilege here in a way I don't believe would make people fight. He doesn't make it something that's cancerous. He just makes it something that's so.
We've been engaged in a global conversation about race and racism. You've probably had discussions at home, at school, or at work, and in those conversations, you've probably heard the term white privilege. You may have even had this term used in a way that felt like an insult or an accusation. Others will have told you that it's all just made up to make white people feel bad, and none of this is right. Privilege is a hard concept for people to understand, because normally when we talk of privilege, we imagine immediate, unearned riches and tangible benefits for anyone who has it. But white privilege, and indeed all privilege, is actually more about the absence of inconvenience, the absence of an impediment or challenge. And as such, when you have it, you really don't notice it. But when it's absent, it affects everything you do. There are lots of types of privilege out there. The privilege of being born into a wealthy family versus a poor family is kind of obvious. But then there's the privilege of being able-bodied versus having or acquiring a disability. that most of us take for granted. I have two very close friends who are wheelchair users, and I'll be honest, when I first met them, I was completely ignorant about the everyday ways their lives are made harder through no fault of their own. Some of these ways are simply thoughtless, but some of them are just the way we live, just the way we build infrastructure, just the way everything works. That just makes their life harder than mine. That's just one of the ways that I'm privileged. And understanding that, embracing that, doesn't make me a bad person. But ignoring it raises the chance that my friends will be excluded in ways that are not obvious to me. And as their friend, I can't allow that. There's a good chance, as a white person watching this, your life is already hard. Every day you have to overcome some difficulty or challenge just to get by, but you can still have white privilege. White privilege doesn't mean you haven't worked hard or you don't deserve the success you've had. It doesn't mean that your life isn't hard or that you've never suffered. It simply means that your skin color has not been the cause of your hardship or suffering. There is nothing but a benefit to understanding our own privileges, white and otherwise. It brings us closer to those who are different. It helps us be vigilant about the ways we treat others different than us. It helps us make a society that is fairer and more equal. Having white privilege doesn't make your life easy, but understanding it can help you realize why some people's lives are harder than they should be.
All right, that was exceptional, but all I'm noticing is that in the chat, Mina just typed during the middle of that, I just realized I was messaging Billy privately throughout the entirety of the show as opposed to messaging the entire group, and now she's snorting with laughter in a way that's going to make snot come out of her face.
I really want to talk about privilege, but I also want to talk about the possibility of cultivating a female Stugatz character called Sugatz. I'm torn. That's what was being discussed.
Okay, no, but you were discussing privately. You were communicating with just Billy. Well, tell the people. You got 45 seconds. Let's go. Pitch us.
On Sugatz or privilege?
No, on Sugatz. Yes, on Sugatz.
Sugatz wasn't my idea, but I think it's a really good idea, especially as we consider privilege and Stugatz. What if Stugatz was a woman? Would the original Stugatz try to, get with Sugatz? Is a great question.
Well said.
Well, it's hard to talk when you got snot in your face. It's also very hard to communicate with others when you don't know how to message someone not privately. Sugatz is a great idea. Again, you guys better off air than on.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.